This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. With Ramp, you get full visibility into your company's spending and control who spends what with each vendor. Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts instantly to save your team valuable time. Ramp automates data entry and routine tasks with automated approvals, expense categorization and bill payments, time-consuming tasks, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. Get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus for Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, as always, and today for you guys, I have an interview that I've been trying to do for a long time, and it seems like with a lot of this biblical-related stuff, there's usually a lot of obstacles that end up popping up in the way, but at the same time, it always feels like stuff falls at the exact spot that it's supposed to. This person I'm having come on today, it's kind of perfect that it falls under my last conversation with Vicky Joy Anderson, and the first two, of course, and having L.A. Marzulli on the show, because it kind of led way into this conversation and connected a lot of awesome pieces. But I think you guys are definitely going to enjoy this one today. We get into this guest's personal experiences, and we get into some philosophy, of course, because all of that is absolutely fascinating. But before we get into this conversation today, we, of course, have to do news and updates and front of house. And first and foremost, for news and updates, I know I mentioned it on the last episode, and I'm going to keep mentioning it because I want to keep boosting up this merch store. I recently dropped four new designs. Two of them, of course, are different than black t-shirts like I've always planned on doing, but now I have a blue one and I have a green one, and I have a lot more that I'm planning on adding in the future. So if you guys want to go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store, there is, of course, some of the podcast designs, but for the most part, I'm trying to focus on designs for other things, usually relating to creatures, conspiracies, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys want to get any cool merchandise pertaining to all of that, make sure you guys keep your eyes on the Open Minds Media merch store, because I have a lot of expansion intentions coming up soon. And if you guys want to scoop one of the shirts that I have for yourselves, because I also did make the website a lot less confusing, so there's a lot less BS designs and it just gets a lot more to the point. It's a lot cleaner looking, but you guys can use code CRYPTID10 to receive 10% off. And of course, the link for that merch store is available down in the show notes. And so is that promo code if you guys forget it. So make sure you guys go and check it out either during the commercial break or at the end of the show. And moving into front of house, if you might be interested in reporting an encounter, You guys can do that to OMM Encounter Reports at Outlook.com. And it doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how small. I absolutely would love to hear about them. And either one, I can read them on the show if you guys want to send it in as a typed out message. Or you guys can always record a voice message and you guys can email it to me and I can play that in the beginning of the show. Or if you don't want any of it talked about whatsoever, you just want somebody to talk about your experiences with, I'm always here for that too. And if you are reasonably close to me, of course, I might even be able to come out and investigate it. But none of that will happen unless you report those encounters to OMM Encounter Reports at Outlook.com. Or go to the link tree, and there is a specific submission form for that. Or you guys can even send me messages on Instagram or Facebook. Instagram I am more active on, but either is definitely a viable option. And if you guys enjoy this show, I know I've said it a million times, but don't forget to go and check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, that I do with my awesome co-host, Oren, deep diving into a bunch of different topics, a lot of the same stuff we talk about on this show, but from our perspective and our research. And you guys can also check out our YouTube/Patreon show, Bizarre Inquiries, which the format for that will be changing up pretty soon here. So if anybody is interested in submitting some questions for that, or possibly even a video clip that we can discuss, I'm going to try to make it a little bit more video-friendly. So we're going to have a little bit of a difference as far as that goes. We're going to bring in our own video clips and stuff and just try to make that our catch-all fun show for everybody to go and check out. And if you guys want to support the show, you guys can go and join the OMM Patreon. Over there, there are three tiers, a $1 tier, $3 tier, and a $5 tier, all of which come with 7-day free trials, of course, to see if you guys like them. And there is also the sponsorship tier if you guys are interested in sponsoring the show and getting ads put on the show. And of course, I already mentioned the merch store in the beginning, but if you guys want to go and check that out, of course, that link for that is down in the show description, and there's going to be a lot of awesome expansion as far as that goes, like I mentioned. And the third way you guys can support the show, and one of the best ways of supporting the show, is through leaving a review on iTunes or Spotify. I see all the numbers go up on Spotify, trying to boost it up on iTunes, so if you guys don't mind typing out a review so that I can read on the show and give you a big shout out, I would more than appreciate it. And if you guys want to stay up to date on the show and on the merch store and on Open Minds Media, you guys can go and follow that stuff on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. Instagram, like I mentioned earlier, is the one that I'm the most active on, but any of those are definitely an awesome way to keep up to date on the show. And every single thing that I mention is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, experiencer and author, Karen Wilkinson. How's it going today?
It's going great. Thank you, Shane. I'm just so happy to be here with you. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Man, we've been trying to do this for a long time. So this is long awaited. I'm really excited about actually getting you to come on the show. I've had Ellie Marzulli on recently, who talked highly about you. Of course, our common friend, Vicky Joy Anderson, who we always both talk to. So I'm glad that this finally came and happened, because we've had just so much back and forth with everybody and everybody talking good about everybody. So just awesome to have such an awesome group of people. And finally, again, get you on the show. Because we've been trying to do this for too long.
We have been, but it's good. We've gotten to know each other a little bit over these months, and we have friends in common, and anyone who's a friend of Vicky's is a friend of mine. I love her. She's amazing. So happy to be in good company tonight. Thank you.
And hopefully at some point soon, we'll get to do a show with you and Vicky, because that'd be absolute fun. We talked about that a little bit, I think, through text and stuff, and I'm sure we could definitely set something like that up.
Oh, we will do that for sure. Yes. Look for that in the future, everyone, because we are going to do that one.
Yeah, to give you your solo introduction first, of course.
Yes. We'll see how it goes tonight.
You already know it's going to go good. So for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, what your experiences are, I don't know exactly where you want to start at, but why don't you kind of let people know a little bit about your background and your book, and then if you want to, we can kind of get into your experiences that led you into writing the book.
Okay. So, yeah. For everyone listening, we just got completely booted out as we started to do this interview. So here we go again. But I'm Karen Wilkinson, and the book is Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. And it's an account of my lifetime of experiences from, sorry, my screen is messing up in front of me still. It's an accounting of my lifetime of experiences written from a biblical perspective. So it kind of gives you a perspective of who and what these entities are based on my personal experiences, based on firsthand accounts, and based on a biblical perspective. Sorry about that, everyone listening, but I have all kinds of craziness coming up on my screen.
It seems like every single time we get into these biblical conversations on the show, there's always a lot of tech issues. And I always talk about this demons in the system concept. Okay. And I think that whenever you're about to have a conversation that's definitely an important conversation, it seems like this just happens back to back. Like it's going into the whole spiritual attack idea. Like they know that once the information gets out, they do everything they can to try to stop it.
They do. I've been attacked and tried to stop. I've had so many attempts to stop me to the degree of trying to take my life. And that actually is what brought me to writing this book and sharing with Ellie Marzulli, because I had just to jump kind of into it full force, I had a near-death experience. And after that, I did some PTSD therapy, which allowed me to deal with this lifetime of experiences and then be able to talk about it and share it. But I didn't know what to do with it at that point, and I wasn't comfortable sharing it with anyone except my husband. And that's what led me to Ellie Marzulli. I didn't know him. We hadn't met before. I wasn't incredibly familiar with his work. I was mildly familiar, so I started to familiarize myself with him. We met up in Dallas, and I shared my story with him, and he's the first person I shared it with. It was very nerve-wracking, very emotional. I think I cried for 3 days after. And, you know, it's been a process doing this, but that became the center point for his fourth movie in the UFO series on abductions. And then again, he put portions of that interview into the cattle mutilation film and number 10 in the series, which was What is the Truth? And after that fourth movie came out, I was terrified about what would happen. As far as sharing that story, the ridicule, the criticism, and about them coming after me, because I've been warned not to speak about it. But I felt I had to. I couldn't fight the feeling that I had to share this. God really had impressed it on my heart so strongly. And I met up with him again at a conference in here in Texas. And after he was done speaking, so many people came up to me to thank me for sharing my testimony, and then who wanted to talk about their experiences and who were grateful because they were no longer feeling alone. They had someone to talk to. They had someone with a story in common, and they felt like it was okay, that they were going to be okay. And I realized there's so much more to this than me just sharing my testimony, my story, what happened to me. And then I felt compelled to write. God really put it on my heart to write, and LA asked me to write the book, so I did. I wrote it very quickly. It was just a matter of a couple of months. It's easy to write the truth, but it's difficult when it's so emotional.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine, especially with you've gone through so much trauma with it. It's like you're almost like reliving that trauma as you're trying to put it into word and description on a page.
It was cathartic and healing and emotional and difficult and good and bad and all kinds of things all at the same time. It was just an emotional whirlwind. But at the same time, I was able to provide biblical resources for people to explain who and what these things were and why these things were happening and why they happened the way that they did. And so it not only helped me reconcile some things, but it was also helping to explain to others what was going on in the UFO community and a lot of the fallacies that are out there, because there's just a lot of misleading information out there. And the book that I'm working on now is going to expand on that, because there's just so much more I could have covered, but I didn't want to take away from the focus of the book, the first book. So anyway, as soon as, so that's how the book came to be. I was quite surprised. It's not something I ever expected to do. It's the first book I've ever written. I enjoyed every minute of it, and I've been writing for LA Marzulli's monthly newsletter before and since the book came out. And it's been such a blessing, because I've gotten to work with, talk with, speak with, meet with so many people with similar experiences who have lived through a lifetime of the same thing. Some people have written to me and said, I read your book and I just read my life story. Or I read your book and I'm no longer alone. Or I never thought anyone would understand what happened to me. And now I feel like somebody understands. And now I know I can talk to other people or I can share this truth. So it has been a blessing in more ways than I could ever imagine. And something I get to keep doing. Now I get to speak at conferences and talk to people and meet with people more often. And it's just, it's been amazing. It really has been amazing.
It's almost kind of interesting sometimes how you can have something so traumatic that happens to you and God pushes you down this path that makes it so that you end up meeting this community of like-minded people and you end up just, you almost feel like you end up living into your full potential because you just get that little bit of a nudge. And it's kind of a hard thing for a lot of people to think about, the whole matter of sometimes you're intended to go through some hardships and the intention is that you come out on the other end stronger. And in turn, you can be the mouthpiece for other people who have been through the same experiences, because a lot of people ask themselves, like, if God is around, why would he do this to me? And they don't realize that there is an end motive to all the things that happen. And sometimes, again, you have to go through the trauma to bring things to light, because if somebody nobody goes through it, it's just going to remain in the shadows. You need that special person who's going to talk about it. And in turn, like you were saying, you get the reward of this wonderful community of people, a bunch of like-minded people, and you get to do something that you end up enjoying in the end, which I'm sure back in the day when all this stuff was happening, you never thought it would end up leading into something good eventually. And it's just hard for people to see that full spectrum when you're going through something traumatic. And again, by sharing your experiences, it ends up helping way more people than you could ever even imagine. Like, there's so many different faceless people that, you know, talking about these stories helps. And for anybody that has anything that's ever happened to them, you know, it's one, therapeutic to actually get it out and talk about it, especially if it's with somebody who's going to try to work through this stuff with you and not just kind of hear your story and call you crazy or leave it at that. But, like, you know, you just can't be scared to let this kind of stuff out, because you never know who might have like-minded experiences. And in turn, you might be able to start connecting some pieces, just to shoot back the whole thing with, like, Vicky and I having like experiences. If it wasn't for me coming onto a podcast and talking about mine and her coming out and talking about it in her books and everything, then we would have never been able to meet in the middle and realize that we have so much stuff in common and such similar with our backgrounds and stories.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you get to help people. I mean, I get to help people and share with people, but I also get to make it okay to talk about something that has such a negative stigma behind it. When people say, I've been abducted by an alien or UFOs, that's the stuff of comedy sketches or insane asylums and things like that, because that's the story that has been perpetrated and forcefully, purposely fed to the public to cover these things up. And so it's been, it has the powers that be, those who are, you know, putting the these things out there are trying to create an atmosphere where you can't talk about this because it keeps it in the shadows and it keeps it secret. And that's just not the case. It's not crazy. I'm not crazy. The people I've talked to aren't crazy. We're just your normal everyday moms, dads, brothers, sisters, neighbors, friends, whatever. You know, it happens to everyone. It knows no racial, ethnic, or any boundaries at all. It's worldwide and it's everyone. But we get to take this evil and use it against them and use it for good. And that's the best part of it. You know, God has given me beauty for ashes, something I never thought would happen. But here I am getting to use it for good and getting to help people with it. And I'm so grateful for that, because it was a lot of trauma and I never, you know, never expected it to end, like, to work out like this. So it's been a great experience.
Talk about hidden in plain sight too. One thing I've noticed in a lot of movies, actually, when obviously they play their narrative that they're trying to play, but they always have this character who's the one who's looked at like he's absolutely crazy. He's the one that's saying, like, I've seen the aliens, I've interacted with them, or, you know, I've seen the paranormal, I've interacted with it. And as soon as everything hits the fan, then that person's the one that they all rely on, because he already knows everything about it and he was never crazy in the first place. So it's kind of funny that they spin that backwards narrative where it's like, all right, this person's crazy. And then you look past it in the movie, not realizing that maybe the message they're trying to tell you is the person you think is crazy is actually right. But we're just going to leave it making it feel like it's a sci-fi movie.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is nobody wants to talk about this. They won't take it to their neighbors or their friends or their spouses or their therapists or their church or anyone. They won't talk to anyone about it because you're afraid of what people are going to say. And I understand that. When I first interviewed with Elie Marzulli, I was terrified. I thought, you know, what's going to happen now that I've shared this? Not only because the entities who had taken me my whole life had threatened me my whole life about talking, but just there was such a negative public stigma about it. And before that, I had had the near-death experience, which was very suspect also, because if you want, I can talk about that briefly. That's
absolutely. I was going to say, I'd love to get into your full background of experiences if you'd like to get into it. And I, of course, wanted to get into your near-death experience. So whatever order you want to play it off in, I'd absolutely love to hear about it.
I'll start with that, and then I'll back up to kind of where the abduction experiences started.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
It was just about, I think it was about 10 years ago, not quite. I was going in for a surgery on my back, which was not my first one. It was probably the third or fourth or fifth or sixth. I can't even remember which one it was now, but because there's so many. But and this particular surgeon I had been with before, he had done other surgeries, and they wheeled me into the operating room, but they weren't ready for me yet. And I didn't have a sedative or anything, so I wasn't hooked up to any machines or anything. I just had two IV ports in my arm, one in each arm. And so I was waiting on the operating table, and they're like, you know, we'll be ready for you in a minute. I'm like, it's fine. You know, it wasn't my first time in there. I wasn't nervous or anything. And I've talked to other doctors about this since who walked through the process, and they're like, yeah, there's nothing about that. This what happened. That's right. But so, and someone came in, it was a woman. She was wearing a white lab coat. I assumed she was an anesthesiologist or a nurse anesthetist. I didn't know which. She didn't say. And she came in, she said, I have something to give you. And she pushed, she leaned over me, and her pocket was full of syringes. She took one out and pushed it into my IV port. I thought it was a sedative because that was what would normally come next. And I was looking forward to that because it just relaxes you, and I'd just fall asleep, and I wouldn't even have known when they started the surgery. But she pushed it in my IV port, whatever was in the syringe, and then she turned and walked away, and I never saw this woman again. And I couldn't find her. I did look. She walked away, and she had given me a paralytic. And there was no one around me, and I was not hooked up to any machines. And I lay there on the table, and I died. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I couldn't breathe. It felt like my body was made of cement. There were two nurses in the room who were walking around doing prep stuff, getting things ready for surgery. So eventually, so I'm laying there, and I'm dying and can't breathe. And I just remember in my head thinking, oh, Lord, please help me. And the second I said that, I heard an audible voice in my head that said, it's okay, you can let go now. And in the blink of an eye, I was out of my body, above myself somewhere. I was always to the left side of my body, watching everything. I could see not only the operating room, but all the rooms around it. Like, walls didn't keep me from seeing. I could still see and hear everything going on, but I was not in a physical body. I was still myself. I had my personality, which I found the most interesting of all. I was like, wow, I'm still me. I'm still Karen, not with a name or a body or hair or eye color or, you know, anything, just me. I was still intact. I felt the most incredible, intense love and peace. It was overwhelming. We have nothing like it. There's no way to even describe it, but it was the most beautiful, overwhelming love and peace I've ever felt. It was just like being wrapped in the warmest blanket on the coldest day, and just that sense of just the best feeling in the world. You know, I can't even describe it. And I was watching things happen. I saw the surgeon in the other room getting instrumentation and stuff ready, or some, you know, doing things, washing. And then I saw the nurses walking around, and one of them looked over at me and said, uh-oh, is she having an allergic reaction? And the other one looked at me and walked over closer to my body and said, I don't think she's breathing. And one of the nurses started panicking. The other one ran to get the doctor. The next thing I know, I see the doctor running in, yelling, bag her, and they put one of those bag things on my face and tried to revive me, and now the room is starting to fill with people, you know. Now they realize I'm dead. The room's filling with people. Eventually, a male anesthesiologist, I could tell he's a doctor, I couldn't read his name, but he was clearly a doctor, was in there, and because I met him after, and I saw everyone's faces, you know, I could see it. Everyone who was in there working on me. Eventually he puts my neck back and intubates me. And as soon as he puts that metal tube in my mouth and my down to put it down my throat, I just remember tasting metal in my mouth, and then everything went black and I was back in my body. And the next thing I know, I woke up in the, recovery room, and, there were, usually when I wake up in a recovery room, there's a whole bunch of people in there recovering and two or three nurses taking care of everyone. This time, there were about six or seven people standing around my bed trying to get me through recovery. I guess every time they'd wake me up, I would be screaming in pain so bad they had to keep putting me back under so I wouldn't have a stroke or a heart attack, which I did have a stroke during the death experiences. But eventually, about 3.5 hours into that, I remember they woke me up and I'm screaming in pain. The pain was just so intense, and it must have just been the experience of coming back into my physical body, that I remember thinking to myself, dear God, please help me. You know, I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden, there were these two handsome young orderlies at the foot of the bed. And I looked at them and I said, you look like you'd be two of my kids, two of my boys. I have a lot of kids and they're grown, you know. So, and they were so sweet, and they calmed me down and helped me through. And as soon as they showed up, I was fine. I wasn't screaming in pain anymore. I had the pain, but it didn't bother me. So over that next, of course, that next kind of 30 minutes, I was fine and got out of recovery, and they wheeled me up to the room. And I'm talking to these young men the whole time. They were just so sweet. And we get to the room, and there's a nurse and an orderly on either side of me up by my head. And I'm in ICU, so my husband and my daughter-in-law were allowed to be there with to wait for me. And I grabbed their hands and I said, you have to meet the boys. They remind me of our kids so much. Wait till you meet them. And I looked at the foot of the bed and they were gone. And so I looked at the nurse and the other orderly and I said, what happened to the boys? And they're like, honey, what boys? I'm like, the two orderlies that were at the foot of the bed with me all the way up through the elevator, down the hall. They've been with me the whole time. She said, honey, it's just been the two of us. I'm like, no, I've been talking to them. They were there. I don't know their names. They didn't have name tags on, you know, but they were with me the whole time. She's like, no, honey, it's just been the two of us. We wondered who you were talking to. I guess they thought I was delirious because I was talking to them the whole way. No one else saw them. They weren't there for anyone else but me. And I think they must have been angels, like good angelic beings. And the reason I like to share this story is for a couple of reasons. One, it shows the difference between a good angelic experience and a bad one, because I had a lifetime of these really negative, bad experiences. And then I had this amazing, beautiful angelic experience in the hospital where they helped me. They showed up. They did what they came to do, which was help me. They didn't interfere with anyone or anything else. And then they were gone. But what they did was amazing. And it was beautiful and incredible. And I searched that hospital for them. I couldn't find them or the anesthesiologist who had given me the paralytic. And no one knew who she was. I described her. I talked about her. No one else knew. Even the nurses who had been in the room didn't remember seeing her. I don't know how it happened. But it did. And she was definitely there. But it was just such an incredible experience. And afterwards, I went through PTSD therapy because of the paralyzed part was so much like the sleep paralysis and the waking paralysis I'd experienced all my life. That PTSD therapy helped me to deal with this lifetime of abduction experiences. And that's when everything really kicked into high gear, and I met up with L.A. Marzulli and then wrote the book. So, but it was an incredible experience.
I mean, depending on which way you want to look at it, I was going to ask if you thought that that first woman who came in may have been some type of like demonic attack or something like that. But kind of like what we were talking about a little bit earlier about the whole idea that sometimes God puts you through these things in order to make it so that you end up coming out on top. obviously the two that showed up later on were definitely some form of like a guardian angel. Right. And the first one I was questioning whether or not it may have been something demonic, but now, as weird as this sounds, I almost kind of am curious if it was some type of other angelic being and it was intended to happen to help you get through the PTSD and the trauma of the other experiences. Like God knew that you were going to come out on top of it and he just had to put you through that to help you out later on, even though it was horrifying at the time.
Yeah, I get that. I understand what you're saying, but based on my experiences with God and then with the darkness and the fallen ones, God doesn't usually want you to go through trauma. He has other ways. And so I don't really feel like that was something that God wanted to have for me. But because we live in a fallen world and because we have free will and things are the way they are, that's why these bad things happen. Although I do agree that, you know, sometimes, yeah, these things happen. God lets us make mistakes so that we can find our way, right? But this wasn't me. That was somebody else doing that to me. So in that respect, I find it that took someone else's free will to do.
Or they were influenced by whoever was telling you that they don't want any of your experiences talked about. Because assumably they knew that you're going to end up writing this book and everything after that. So maybe it was that last attempt to try to stop the information and God and his guardian angels came rushing in and ended up making it so you came out on top in the end.
Exactly. And it wasn't the final attempt. I will tell you, there have been further attempts in my life since then, but I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't know, because it has come with its share of difficulties. But the blessings on the other side of that are so great that it's okay. I'm okay with that. I mean, you don't write a book to make money. You don't write a book for fanfare and accolades. And I'm certainly not doing it for any of that. I mean, I give all glory to God for everything that has come about from this. But I'm doing it because I know it is a path God's put me on and I can help people. And that's the most important part. But yeah, I think that was intentional. It's hard to say because I don't have proof. So that's just conjecture on my part. But certainly having lived through it, that's how it felt for me firsthand. Yeah, and I had been warned. And I can back up to my earliest memories to talk about that if you'd like.
Absolutely. Wherever you'd like to start with the main part of the experiences of the book and everything's about, however you want to lay it out to, whatever you're comfortable with, floor is yours to tell your experience how you want to tell it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was taken from my earliest memories. From the time I can remember, you know, at 5 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old and up, I would wake up in the middle of the night. I would go to bed looking for a place to hide, usually, knowing that didn't matter. An older sibling, you know, I think I remember being about 6 and she was about 9, said to me once, you know, it doesn't do us any good to hide. They can see us through the house. This is a 6 and a 9-year-old who don't have a vocabulary for who is coming to get me. And I only talk about my story. I will never talk about anyone else's, especially without their express permission. So I'll keep this in the singular. It didn't matter where I was, whose home I was at. If I tried to hide, they could find me. But I didn't know who they were. I didn't have a vocabulary for grays, UFOs, aliens, you know, all of these things. We didn't have the movies and the books and the TV shows and the podcasts. And even if they did exist, and I'm sure there were some at that point, like Chariots of Fire and things like that were already out, I think.
I think Chariots of Fire came out in the 60s or the 70s. So, I mean, it was all just hidden information at the time.
Yeah, right. But that didn't necessarily talk too much about that from what I remember. But it wasn't available to me at 5 or 6 years old, right? So I didn't have things like that available, but I do have the book out there somewhere. I'll have to look at it.
1969. Sorry, I had it on the shelf. I just want to confirm it. Yeah, 1969. Yeah, I would
have been, you know, 3 years old when that came out, so it certainly wouldn't have been in my bookshelf with Curious George and all the others. You know, might have been on my parents' bookshelf. Yeah, but I don't know.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would feel a change in the room. Before I even knew they were there, I could feel them. I would feel an evil presence. I would just feel just a darkness, a heaviness. Sometimes there would be a light in the window or coming from a window down the hall or somewhere. Sometimes I would notice it. Sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes it would get just eerily quiet. Like if we were in the countryside, the crickets and cicadas would just stop. There would be a low hum accompanying this, and it would just get lower and lower and slower and slower throughout the process. I would notice at least two, always at least two, sometimes more, of the typical gray aliens that people talk about. They had the big bulbous heads and the eyes that didn't move. It just like a big black screen, but the almond-shaped eyes. They had really skinny, skinny necks and arms and legs. They were probably about 4 feet tall. And some of them didn't smell very good. Some didn't have a smell at all, but some smelled like a cross between sulfur and dead animal and urine and feces, kind of, you know, just some had a smell, some didn't.
The whole like decaying flesh smell, like one thing that I've always been kind of curious about is if these things aren't necessarily like conscious, but rather some type of like organic drone or something like that, or biological drone. So, I mean, that kind of fits in with that, that maybe they do decay if it's not technically live flesh after a certain amount of time.
I wrote about that in the book. I've written more extensively about that for L.A. Marzulli's newsletter, and I'll write more about that in the next book. But I believe that these are basically an avatar, a biologically created entity. So, you know, we can create skin in a lab. They did not. The way that they're presented, their mouths didn't open. They didn't have, like, discernible ears. Their eyes didn't move. They didn't, their bodies were so skinny, I can't imagine where an organs would go. They didn't have any discernible male or female parts. They seemed to be just a biologically created avatar, created to house something else. They could possibly be AI or another entity. I personally believe they were created to house demons. People get demons and demonic mixed up all the time. There's a lot of confusion in that area. And again, that's something I write a lot about and will write more about. But demons are what we know from many, many of the extra canonical, non-canonical texts like Jasher and Enoch, for two that people are most familiar with, the Book of Giants, things like that. They are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. We know from Genesis 6 that Nephilim are the progeny of the fallen angelic beings, the Bnei HaElohim, the sons of God, who decided to fall to leave their first estate, which is in the book of Job, I believe. I don't have all my biblical references in front of me, and I'm not always the best at remembering all the verses, but who left their first estate and then found human women and took of them wives of all whom they chose, with plural wives. So they fell from their first estate. We know from, I could name off just dozens of biblical verses that show that angelic beings, sons of God, have a physical form, that they are similar to us and that they have a corporeal form. It's not to say they can't change in and out of that form, but they clearly have a corporeal form. They come and they eat food. They come and they, you know, touch people. They talk with people. They walk with people. They wear clothing. They do all the things that humans do. They have their own food. They eat their own food. They eat our food, that, you know, kind of thing. But when it says in Genesis 6 that they fell and took wives of all they chose, and their offspring were the Nephilim, the mighty men of old, the giants, and so on, the creatures of Greek mythology. I'm sure your audience is very familiar with that, so I won't go down that road too far unless you want me to.
We've talked about it a bunch of times on the show, but if you have any other connections, you're more than welcome to connect them, because I feel like it's one of those things that you just kind of have to mention here and there just to make sure people are staying on the right pace with it, you know?
Right. And people are more and more familiar with the word Nephilim, which I think is wonderful and amazing. It's important, because I had known about this when I first became born again when I was 18 years old. I would have been able to stop this lifetime of abductions, but instead, no one taught me these parts of the Bible. I didn't know what that was. I didn't put it together, the connection between who was taking me, what was happening to me, and the biblical references, and I fell away, and they were able to just keep taking me. So it's something that's really important, because if you don't know the truth, then you don't know what you're fighting against, and you don't know how to defeat it and what tools are at your disposal. So, but the Nephilim, when they were killed, you know, the extra canonical books tell us, especially the Book of Enoch, they were neither human nor angelic. They were neither form above nor below. So their spirits were just left to wander the earth. And those are the demons that we so commonly call them today. And we know from Jesus and the book of John and other books where he finds the man who's possessed and casts them out. They ask to be put into the pigs because they want to be in a body. They're lower than the angels. Demons are, because they're not fully angelic, just like we are lower than the angels, but they're somewhere between human and angelic. So they're a little higher than us, a little lower than the angels. And so a gray alien meat suit is the perfect place for them. It's a body they can inhabit. They get to do, you know, whatever they're told to do and get to be in a body. And without a mouth, they can't yell and scream and bite and curse. Without sexual organs, they can't rape. Without a strong body, they can't hurt somebody. So they have to just do what they're told to do. Now, I have a feeling that they get certain rewards for their efforts and their work, but, you know, they're torturing and terrifying people. So that has to be rewarding to the demons in itself. I mean, I noticed that they seem to take pleasure in the fact that I was terrified, especially as a small child. You know, as a little kid, I was 5 or 6 years old, and I was terrified, and they loved it. You could tell they loved it. They just fed off of it. But at that point, going back to the abduction, there would be a couple of these grays in the room, and they would put me, if I were to yell or scream or anything like that, if there was someone else in the room with me, a sibling or later in life, a boyfriend, spouse, whatever, they would be put into a state of such deep sleep that I couldn't rouse them. No one in the house would wake up. And then I would also be put into a state of waking paralysis where I was still wide awake, but I couldn't move. I couldn't yell. I couldn't scream. I couldn't fight. I couldn't do anything. And I would be levitated off of the bed at that point, or wherever I was, couch, bed, whatever I was sleeping on at the time. And that low vibrational hum would continue to get louder and lower and deeper as I would be taken towards a window or a ceiling. And I remember just seeing every detail in the ceilings, every detail in the windows, the screens, how some of them were broken or bent or not square, and how there were bugs in the light fixtures or the curls in the wallpaper on the ceiling, or the imperfections in the way the ceiling was painted, or the way that the like spackling and stuff on the ceiling was. I don't know what it's called, but it was just, you know, the things that I remember seeing just up so close, you know. It's right in my face, and I'm like thinking, how am I going through this? But I felt like my body would go into a million bazillion little pieces. It would just go with that vibration and go through a wall or through a ceiling, through a window. And at that point, you know, sometimes I would see the house and the room and everything getting further away. And sometimes at that point, I would just go into a sleep state. And the next thing I know, I'd wake up at a bank of elevator doors. Sometimes I wouldn't wake up until I was on an exam table or in, you know, different places. It just depended. I wake up at different times if I woke up at all. Sometimes I don't remember waking up at all during the, I just remember the beginning and then being returned. It's different each time. Sometimes I have memory of the whole thing. Sometimes some of them I have memories of parts of it. I never had any hypnosis or hypnotherapy or anything like that. These are just memories I always had. And I have a theory as to why I have these memories. Because I was trying to talk about what was happening to me. I would get returned when they were done with me. I know sometimes I would be on an exam table and they would just be doing experiments, doing things with lights or what looked like today I know to be like a little laser things or needles or things that look like x-ray machines, stuff I didn't understand, and they didn't tell me what they were doing. You have to excuse my voice. I feel like I'm losing my voice today a little bit, but you know, it was just scary. I was just scared all the time. Sometimes I'd wake up with these elevator doors. There was these banks of doors, different places, all similar though. And get in the elevator door, and it would just go down and down and down and down. And then I'd get on what they called the sideways elevators. And you have to remember, in the 60s and 70s, vehicles made a lot of noise. So these would go sideways or up at an angle or down at an angle and make these really weird, crazy turns. And it felt like an elevator because it was quiet and it wasn't bumpy or anything. It was just smooth and quiet, but it had benches in it. So I know it was a different kind of thing than the elevator. anyway, and that would take me to wherever we were going. I was taken into underground facilities. They had to be underground because we got in elevators that went down. So that's, and these places were huge. I mean, they were bigger than anything you can imagine. There's just no good way to describe it except, say, think of the biggest, you know, sports stadium and airport and hospital buildings and whatever all put together. There was just hallways and stairways and big rooms and small rooms and elevators and just every, just so much. So much. It was like giant cities underground. It was crazy and confusing. And there were people there. There were humans that were being taken besides me, some naked, some clothed. There were humans working alongside different types of alien entities that I saw. Some looked military. Some looked like they were wearing lab coats. Some were in these really benign smocks and like smock shirt kind of pants outfits that were just really plain and benign. And then there were different kinds of alien entities, like grays that weren't like the grays that came to get me, but they were all different. This is why I really feel those grays are like an avatar, because Shane, the other grays were just all different. Some were really tall and big. Some were short, and some were looked very feminine. Some looked very masculine. Some looked almost reptilian, and some looked almost Nordic. And then there were reptilians, and some of the reptilians looked almost Nordic or almost gray-ish, and there were Nordics, and then there were like the Insectalin, but all of those types, and I just group them into those four types. There were some that looked more like some of the other race, you know, like there was some variation between them. So there could have been thousands of different kinds, but they did seem to have those four basic sets of features about them. And then if there were others that just looked really human and weren't actually humans but were them, I would never know, because no one told me who they were or what they were. So this is just based on what I saw.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in. Okay. I've been kind of curious with like the different species too, like assumably if they're trying to produce like hybrids and stuff like that with humans, whether these things are avatars or not, it seems like they definitely would crossbreed amongst themselves for whatever purpose they're trying to fulfill. And I mean, it almost kind of makes you wonder that if there are like, to just say the grays are the ones that are like the avatar vessels, but the insectalins and the reptilians and all that kind of stuff are a totally different separate race. It almost kind of makes you wonder if they have, let's just say, average people from wherever they come from, and they're abducting them and doing the same things to their average people. And obviously the people in the know are the ones working at this facility, just like the humans that you'd mentioned that are working at this facility. They're fully aware of all this stuff that's happening.
Right. Yeah. It's so hard to tell because, like I said, no one ever shared that information with me. So I can only go on what I saw and what I experienced. I believe that these entities are the fallen angels of the Bible. And we know from our biblical text that there are many, 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 many different kinds. We have lots of different descriptors in the Bible and in the extra biblical texts, but we don't have a book on the angels. Angels is kind of a misnomer. The sons of God, the B'nai HaElohim, as they're called, would be more accurate. But we don't know enough about them. So we are just kind of scraping together what little information we have to figure out what we can and how it all fits. But what we do know is that they fell. And what I do know is that these entities had the same creator that I had, these ones that when I was with them, I say had because I'm not around them anymore, but they had the same creator that I have. And that when I called on Jesus, when I finally realized that I could call on Jesus to get them to stop, because we all had the same creator, that they had to listen. And this goes, then we get into Vicki Joy Anderson's field of expertise, where we talk about the legalistic parts of the societies and how God's kingdom works legally. But that's what proved that for me, because I'm like, wait, you know, you have the same creator I have. I can call on Jesus. And I do. And I did. And I still do. And, you know, because I believe in my heart, then they have to leave when I call on him. I mean, there are some people who say that doesn't work for them. I get that. And you can look at the book of Acts, chapter 19, verse 11, on from there about the sons of Siwon. I can't remember the name of it, but I'd have to look it up. But that explains very well why it doesn't work for some people. If you don't believe in your heart and you're just calling on him because, well, I'm just copying what someone else's work is, but I've never actually done the work. I've never actually prayed. I've never actually decided I wanted to read my Bible, and I don't believe and I don't want to believe. It's not going to work. But I find that people who believe in the darkness also believe in the light. And so that's why you'll find people going, oh yeah, I was messing around with some stuff and I never really thought that would work, but I got scared and I called on Jesus, and you know what? They left. It's like, yeah, that's because the only reason you understand how evil that was is because you know there's a difference between the evil and the good, and you also believe in the good. But there are people who don't want to believe in any of that, and they're just speaking and they're talking about things and acting like they're experts and acting like they know what they're doing, especially in the fields of ufology and especially in the fields of theology, who have no idea what they're talking about, what they're doing. They're just repeating other people's work mindlessly. And of course it's not going to work for them because they don't have anything in their heart.
That's what I was going to say too, is that even the people that say dabble in the demonic, obviously if you believe in the demonic, you believe in the whole idea of God, and that's the whole reason that it's there in the first place. So if you're in that moment where you're calling out and you want help, you obviously have it in your heart and you still believe, even if you have been dabbling in the dark side, so that help is going to come your way. And kind of going into just another comment I want to make about the different races, these beings too, kind of fitting into like the biblical perspective of things. Obviously, when the fallen angels came down, they didn't just breed with the sons of man. They tried to corrupt nature as a whole too.
Oh.
So assumably, if they came down and they tried to breed with like reptiles or mix their DNA with reptiles and insects and this and that, this could just be a further on variation of that. And it's just another form of Nephilim that doesn't get talked about as much. But if you look at it from that perspective, whether it's reptilian, insectoid, all of these things that seem like they're common creatures that we have on Earth that have the humanoid configuration to them, it would completely make sense, that narrative that they just corrupted nature and then those races just kept living on. They just might live on this planet in a different place than we do. Because if they're reptilians, a lot of people have sightings of reptilians near caves and things. Same with like insectoids and stuff. So, you know, these things could be existing on the planet, just not out on the surface with us.
Oh, exactly. And in my book, I write about a lot about Noah and what happened before and after. And I'm going to expand on that too in future works. But you have to remember too, there's no accounting for rain in the Bible prior to the flood. It talks about how the dew in Genesis, I think Genesis 2, maybe 1 or 2, it talks about how the dew and everything came up from the ground. But there's no accounting for rain. So there's no accounting for how did lakes stay full and oceans and all those things, right? Well, the sun must have been different. The atmosphere must have been different. We didn't have any rain. We didn't have any clouds. We didn't have this, that. So what we have now is very different to what happened pre-Noah. And we know before the flood, when God had Noah, who was perfect in his generation, so his bloodline wasn't corrupt, also get animals after their kind, which meant animals that weren't corrupted either, that were still pure, like a cow that was still really a cow, a horse that was still really a horse, et cetera, et cetera, and take seven of some and two of some and what have you. That, so we know that there was a ton of corruption of animals at that point, and that it continued after that, because it says there were giants in the earth in those days and also after that. So we know there was a second incursion. L.A. Marzulli does a great job of explaining that in his book Countermove, how the Nephilim came back after the flood, for anyone who's curious. It's probably the best I've read about that as far as an explanation goes. But so you have to think, if all of this changed because God shut them in the ark, they didn't shut themselves in, he shut them in. The Bible's very clear about that. Then something changed. You know, I think he not only changed the physiology of the humans on the ark, but changed what was happening in the atmosphere. Everything changed. Everything was wiped out and destroyed. And when he started again, I really think he did it in a way that these fallen angels could no longer just walk around during the day on the earth. And this is why, not to coin a Vicki Joy Anderson's book, they only come out at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can, but they can't come out in the sunlight. This is all something different. It's a different atmosphere because it was a way to curtail them from doing this again. And he made genetic changes to us and to everything else so that they weren't able to cohabitate with us as easily. So they were not able to do the same things that they were able to do before, and they've been taking all this time to try to get back to where they were before. How do we mess with the genetics? How do we do this again? You know, and so that's why giants didn't take over the earth again, because they couldn't survive the way they did before. They were not as strong. They were not as capable. They were not as scary. And God had given man the tools through him to defeat them. And his angels were also defeating them. So, but anyway, that I digress. That's a whole nother scenario. But that's why they were taking people like me, because they found DNA they could work with through me, through my family lineage. That's why they continue on with certain family lines. That's why you'll see someone say, my grandmother was taken, my mother was taken, I was taken, my children were taken. Because once they find DNA they can work with, they want to continue working with that, because we don't live as long as they do either. You know, we know their lifespans are much longer. So, but I've digressed a little bit. Would you like me to go back to kind of what happened after I was taken?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Just a couple quick comments I just wanted to make about that real quick. Talking about the whole idea that these things aren't able to live in the same place as us, I find it kind of interesting the fact that, you know, most people that have experiences with grays or any type of, as we call them, extraterrestrials, it seems like it more so comes to underground. And connecting with the Nephilim thing, it seems like the giants are always seen near cave openings. Like the main one that Elie Marzulli talked about came out of a cave that was in the middle the giant of Kandahar and stuff. So it's like, it just seems like it's all hidden right in front of us. And it's just a matter of connecting all the dots. But it's almost like obvious once you start actually connecting the pieces and actually seeing all of this.
Exactly. That's how I felt too. But you have to really look at it, and then it starts to make sense, right? But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's why they make the grays as well. Because I think the grays are, because they're a biological meat suit, an avatar, if you will, they're not going to be as affected by our atmosphere or if they get caught in the sunlight. And think about it this way too. If a ship crashes, and we know we have crashed craft, and we know we have non-human biologics that have been recovered according to our governments, if they get that, all they're going to get is an empty meat suit, because that demon's just going to take off. And so no one has to worry about having a fallen angel in prison. Not like they could keep one, but that would certainly cause a lot of issues if there was a dead angel hanging out, you know. We know there'd been enough fake pictures of that kind of stuff. What if we had a real one? I mean, that would be something else. But we don't. And there's probably a really good reason for that, because I don't think they can be in our atmosphere, in our sunlight. I really don't, because I've never had encounters happen in broad daylight. It's when the sun goes down. And, you know, like I spent my whole life not being able to sleep on the side of the bed by a window, not being able to look out a window at night, not being able to go outside at night comfortably until the last couple of years, once I really fully understood God's protection for me. I force myself now when we travel to sleep on the side of the bed by the window, because I'm just kind of trying to get myself used to doing that, because I just don't do it. I mean, and it's not just me. I have other people I've talked to who said, yeah, for most of my life, I slept with my up against the wall as hard as, sorry about that, y'all, I just hit my microphone, as hard as I could, because I knew they'd be coming for me. So I would just squish my body against the wall, you know, by my bed. I mean, it's craziness, but those of us who've been taken, it's so traumatic. It's so incredibly traumatic. And when I would be returned, I would sometimes be returned, my pajamas would be inside out or at the foot of the bed or in another room. I'd be terrified. I'd wake, you know, be back in my bed, and I would go and sleep underneath my parents' bed for the rest of the night because I was so scared and there was nowhere else for me to go. And I tried to talk. I did try to tell people what was happening to me, but I didn't have vocabulary. I didn't know to say the UFOs, the aliens, grays, UAPs. Those words were not in my vocabulary. It was the little ones that came to get me. They smell bad. They're hurting me. They're touching me. They're taking me. And you're saying that, but you're at home, right? So you're not gone. So they're like, okay, you've had a bad dream. Do you know what I mean? They're not able to put, the adults in your life aren't able to put those pieces together.
I mean, even the sleep paralysis stuff too, it's like you were saying, it only happens at night. You never hear about people take naps during the day, but you never hear about people experiencing sleep paralysis in the middle of the day taking a nap. And it's usually in the dark waking hours. And, you know, I definitely think that there's a lot connected with that, with the UFO stuff, that a lot of it could potentially be screen memories and stuff. Like Vicky Joy talks about things in the room not necessarily being right and stuff.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Even with that kind of stuff, considering that it's like when you're in a, quote, half dream state, like if you're experiencing stuff like that and you experience it regularly as a kid, like how do you go and tell your parents that? Because they're just going to say, oh, you had a nightmare. Like that's what happened to me the couple of times that I actually tried to talk about it. And I got to a point where I just gave up and just experienced it all myself. And I didn't have anybody to mention anything to.
Right. You give up after a while. I mean, how do you describe sleep paralysis or waking paralysis, both of which I had? I'm in bed and I can't move. They won't let me move. Well, that sounds like a nightmare too, right? So what are you talking about? There's no one in the home. There's no one in the room. You know, of course, they have security cameras. We have dogs and stuff, you know. So they figured no one broke in. What is she talking about? But they knew I was trying to talk. And so one night they took me and they showed me a screen memory. And it sounds like you and your audience are familiar with the screen memory. I always describe it to people as what it is like today to put on a pair of VR goggles. Because it feels real. It sounds real. It looks real. You can't tell. And they showed me my family being marched out in the backyard on the other side of the yard in front of me. They sprayed something on the backs of their necks and said, if you talk, we're going to kill your family. And they showed me what it looked like for my family to be beheaded in front of me. And I was like 6 years old. And I had my first real mental breakdown at like 6 years old. They found me that next week huddled in the corner of a bathroom stall at school. And I'm just holding on my knees and rocking. I wouldn't come out. And they called my mom and she came and got me and talked me out of the bathroom. And I remember just saying, I don't want them to take me. I don't want them to touch me. They keep taking me. They keep touching me. I don't want it. I don't want it. Like a parrot, you know, just without feeling, without emotion. I was just like, I realized at that point, there was nothing I could do. No one was going to be able to help me. No one was going to understand me. I was all alone, kind of like what you were talking about. And I had to figure out what to do. And, you know, the human brain, God has blessed us with this ability to protect ourselves. And that's when I really kind of split. And I don't call it a split personality. I don't call it a dissociative personality disorder so much as I was able to create two sides of me. One side that was there when these things happened. And one side that was there just for the normal day-to-day life. And when bad things were happening to me, whether it was them taking me or even other stuff I didn't like, I could invoke that other side of me. And then the other part of me would just go away. It would just not even engage. And I think that's why I remember as much as I do, because then when they would take me, I would just be non-reactive. I didn't react. And when you're non-reactive, they're not going to put you in a sleep state, or they're not going to mess with you, or they're not going to give you screen memories. They're just going to keep working with you because there's nothing there, because they're really concentrating on what you're thinking and what you're doing, because the communication is mind speak. So you're intentionally focusing thoughts to each other, to them and them to you. But if I'm just not even there in my head, there's no communication going on. So they're just going about what they're doing.
And you're observing and reporting subconsciously in the back of your mind, where they're not necessarily watching it.
Exactly. I'm taking in every minute of it. And sometimes I would take it in, and sometimes I would decide, nope, not tonight. I'm out. And there were different times in my life, like going through puberty, and different times where it was just so intense, and what they were doing to me was so traumatic that I won't let myself remember all of it. I remember, but I won't bring it all forward. I remember enough to share some of it, but I won't share all of it either, because it's not going to help anyone. I mean, these things are too dark, too ugly, and too traumatic. It's like SRA victims. You know, sometimes you hear people share those stories, and you're like, God, that's unbelievable what they've gone through. It is. And sometimes it's necessary to help people. It's not necessary for me to share all the gory, ugly, dark details to help people. And I don't, because I think it might hurt more people than it would help. And it might pull forth memories they don't need to have. You don't need to remember everything to heal. And I think that's important.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a matter of like remembering the overall to understand at least what's happening to you. But the little intricate details, it's like, you don't want to remember anyways, because again, it's just digging up old trauma. It's like, you just got to remember it as a whole. It's almost like the aspect of, I hate to always relate this, but it just seems like the trauma is very similar when somebody's getting like molested as a kid. It's like, mm-hmm. it's good that you remember that it happened as a whole so that you can do something about it later on, deal with the trauma, report the person if you needed to, but you don't need to remember the, every single intricate detail, because at that point it's like you're just rehashing old scars and reliving memories that you don't necessarily need to relive. It's a matter of observing it from a past perspective instead of always putting yourself in that center perspective, which is really hard for a lot of people to do, but I kind of feel like that's where the overcoming starts sometimes, is when you're able to be the bystander and like see the experience happen in your head, but not be in that first person perspective of it happening to you anymore.
Exactly. And that's what it was. I was a bystander for a lot of it, and I just kind of watched it happen until there were things where they wanted me to be front and center. And then in those instances, I would have to kind of cognizantly come forward. But I would do it as my protector and not as my, you know, as the other part of me, which was just the kind of normal person. So it's really interesting, because I've spoken since I've done written this book to so many other people who have done and experienced this in the same ways that I have, who have had these same things happen and who protected themselves in the same way and who are like, I 100% understand what you're saying. So if you don't understand it, that's good. That means you don't need to. <You know? laughs> But if you do understand it, then no, you're not alone. And that's okay too. You know, so it's kind of funny how that works. It's, I don't try to explain it too deeply, because either you get it or you don't. If you don't, that's probably a really good thing. But it is important to understand who and what these things are, because I think that over the coming years, they're going to become more and more prevalent. And there is going to come a time when people are going to have to know how to defend themselves against these entities. I mean, that's already with us now. People already need to know that now, but I think it's going to become more and more prevalent. I mean, we are in what the Bible calls, I think, the days of Noah. When it says in the book of Daniel, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. And he says, seal up this book, Daniel, till the end, you know, and men will go running to and fro across the face of the earth. Well, that's what's happening today. You know, knowledge will increase. That's what's happening today.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptotheology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there on Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
I mean, even talking about them showing themselves more, it seems like there's a lot more people that are having shadow person / sleep paralysis experiences than ever before. And I mean, I talked about it on the Vicky Joy episode about how I think that there's a lot more with the sleep paralysis than when people think that there is. She's mentioned a bunch of times, too, that you know, it could be screen memories of the same thing that people are experiencing with abductions. But if they know that you're somebody who's going to fight, they just throw you in this area where you think you're sitting in a room and there's dark shadow people around you. But you could actually have been on an operating table with things that look like gray standing around you.
Oh, yeah.
And even on the other side, people with the huge upspike of seeing shadow people, if you think about the description of what these demonic beings are and the fact that they're disembodied spirits or souls, whatever you want to call them, what other representation would there be in our reality other than possibly like a shadow of these things? So I've been kind of curious for a while now that a lot of people have different theories on what the shadow people could potentially be, but I'm kind of wondering if they are theoretically the same thing that these grays are, that the demons are. It's just a matter of seeing them in different forms. And one, they come in a physical vessel. In the other one, when they're shadow people, they're usually observing more so than anything. And again, it could be because they're not in their physical vessel.
Exactly. I think you're right on with that. I think they can probably, you know, I don't know what forms they can show up in. I know that they do more damage when they're a physical body, but as a shadow, they're scaring the crap out of people. So they're going to keep doing that too. You know, I mean, because that's what they want, right? They feed off the fear and the terror, and they can get people to do things. And get people to invite them in, and they want to be in that body, your body, anybody. You know, that's what they want. And I think today, with everyone's heads down over their phones or people so engaged in screen time and in VR time and in anything outside of our own reality, people's minds are so open to extra reality type entities and events. And I think that's why they're seeing more, because we're not dealing in physical, tangible things. You and I are doing this through a screen. This is not a physical, tangible interview. We're talking to each other remotely. And people are just so used to everything being not a physical, tangible experience. So, of course, they're going to be allowing things that are shadow, that are in other realms, that are realms that are here, but we can't normally see them, to be seen. You know, the Bible tells us also that angels watch us as if it was a coliseum, as if it was sport. The word, I can't remember the word that it uses, but it's as if, you know, they were watching an event. That's how they watch us, because they can see us. It's like a two-way mirror, but we can't see them. And so it's going to be the same for these demonic entities. They can see beyond time, beyond space. When I was having my near-death experience, time did not exist for me. Space did not exist the same for me. Tangible things did not exist the same for me, but I could see them all. You know, everything that happened for me without a time frame. But it still all happened. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, even what you're talking about with the screens, actually, I think I was just talking about it, maybe even on the previous episode to this, this whole concept that if we're creating some type of non-physical reality inside of our reality, all these things, the whole demon in the system concept, we could be creating a virtual reality for these things where they can have some of the sensations of it being physical without ever actually being physical. So if we're creating this non-physical reality, if there's things that are non-physical, there's no means why they wouldn't be able to exist within that. And it kind of makes you wonder that if we're creating something that these things are able to manipulate and they're coming into it, or if on the other side, there may have been this place that's existed that we purposely lost memory of and disconnected from, and now we're coming full circle back around to it and we're reconnecting into this, like almost like a demon realm or a disembodied realm without even realizing it. And we think that we're creating these paths and we're creating AI, but what we're actually doing is connecting into something that we tried to lose track of. And what we're creating is virtual reality or artificial intelligence is actually disembodied intelligence. And it's just kind of, you can't come full force right off the bat. You have to kind of just be like, oh yeah, I'm a robot. Everything is fine.
No, that makes
keep
sense
working on what you're working on.
Exactly. Well, think about it. Why did the demons want to be in a physical body? Because that's how people were interacting at that time. They didn't have computers. They didn't have VR. They didn't have AI. We had just people and horses and chariots and things like that. So you had chariots of fire for UFO descriptions, and you had humans interacting with humans just physically one-on-one. If you wanted to see someone, you had to walk or ride your horse or whatever 20 miles to get there, you know, and that. So, but So that was why they wanted to be in a body, because that was the only way they could interact. But we don't need to be in a body to interact anymore. You and I are interacting via a screen. So this is a medium that a demonic entity could use to interact as well, which is why when we first started talking, what happened? Bam, everything went down without warning. There was no, hey, there's an error on your screen. There's no explanation. My screen went down. It just all went away. And then it came back because I prayed over it. And we were back online within a minute. But still, this is a medium that we're using that they can use too, because they want to interact.
I talk about a lot of different stuff on the show, and the only time I ever seem to have technical issues is when I start talking about biblical things. And especially, you can ask Vicky, almost every single time we do a show, there's some type of interruption during the show. It happens almost every single time, like clockwork.
Exactly. And I always feel, you know, like that's a good thing. I know when something like that happens that we're over the target, that we're going to cover something good, or we're covering something good, or we're saying something really important, and we'll get into the meat of it, and then something will happen again, you know? And so I'm like, this is good. This means we're upsetting something, and that's good. That's what we want to do. You know why? Because they don't want this out there. Them being the darkness, the fallen ones, whatever, they don't want to be exposed. I mean, it's like the line from the movie, the greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing people he didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if people don't acknowledge that evil exists, then they can't fight it.
Talk about acknowledging it exists, too. I mean, just look at modern day celebrities, particularly musicians. It's all over everything, and people still deny it. They've gotten to the point where they can now put it blatantly in your face, and everybody's just like, ha, 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 ha. Like,
so funny. Yeah, it's not. And look at the Olympics opening ceremony and all this stuff. You cannot deny this stuff is out there.
That was like one of the most disrespectful things I've ever seen in my life, when they did the Last Supper. Like, wow. Like, there were sponsors that actually pulled, and props to those sponsors for actually pulling from that, because I know they were Christian-based companies.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we have to respect one another and one another's choices to believe differently and feel differently about things. Like, not everyone feels about aliens as I do, non-human alien entities the same way I do. But I respect anyone. I don't disparage anyone else's opinions. I respect anyone who has the guts and the ability to come forward with it. Do I think that there are people who are misled, who have kind of Stockholm syndrome going on? I do, because I was there too once. And I understand what that's like and how you just can't see it any other way. I was in the middle of that for most of my life. I understand it. But I can't say that these are our benevolent space brothers when they're kidnapping little children, mutilating animals, you know, stealing fetuses, stealing ovum from women and sperm from men, and raping people and all this. I mean, if you kidnap your neighbor's kid, you're going to jail. That is not benevolent behavior. And nothing that they're doing is benevolent. And people are like, well, they just have a different way of communicating. It's kind of like us experimenting on animals. I'm like, no, we're an intelligent species, capable of intelligent communication. If they would like to communicate with us, they can figure a way to come and sit down with one of our people. If they don't want to sit down with a leader, sit down with a pop star or somebody who's got some kind of clout and share information. Not that I would think that that would be a smart idea, but I'm just saying, you know, sit down with somebody and talk with somebody and share whatever wonderful, benevolent information you have to share. But that's not what's happening. And I was in the middle of it. I watched it. I heard the screams of the humans and the animals being tortured. I was one of the humans being tortured. I held my hybrid baby in my arms and it did not respond to me. You know, I saw them much later in life and it was terrifying. They were nothing but pure evil. It's not what I wanted. I wanted them to be kind and good. I wanted them. But that wasn't the case. And I think that's a conversation for another day, because I know we're probably coming up on the end of our time. So I won't go down that road right now. But, you know, I can't find anything redeeming about these entities.
They say that the devil's biggest tool is misdirection. So theoretically, if you were doing awful things to people and you're trying to completely throw misdirection in, you would have to pick some particular people that you gave a good experience to, so that there would be too much delusion within the phenomenon. You know, like if five people had a bad experience, one had a good experience, that one good experience is going to make people kind of question things. So it just kind of fits into the devil's work of misdirection.
it's funny you should say that, because that's what I wrote about last month in L.A. Marzulli's newsletter. I'm like, you know, one of these beings could show up on the street with white flowing robes and look like a beautiful angelic creature from what people write about, which has nothing to do with angels, and show up right when a horrible accident happened and heal all the people who got hurt and share a little bit of a couple of Bible verses or something maybe. And everyone would think, oh, well, this is one of God's angels. We're going to do whatever he says, right? I mean, it would be that easy to convince people to follow them just by doing a few good deeds and looking the part, you know, but the Bible tells us Satan comes as an angel of light. And I always tell people, don't go calling on these things. Don't do the CE5 stuff. Don't go sitting out in the desert summoning UFOs. You do not know what you will get. I've had good experiences that I talked about, and I've had really, really, really bad ones. And when you think about what happens when someone gets murdered or raped or robbed or carjacked, think about how pedophiles infiltrate schools and churches and businesses. They don't walk in with a t-shirt that says, hey, I'm a carjacker. Hey, I'm a pedophile, a murderer, a rapist, a serial killer. That's not how it works. They work their way in and they con everyone with smooth words. And
they want to be the last person you'd point the finger at.
Exactly. They're the person you trust the most. Everyone says this. That's why there are thousands and thousands of hours of TV shows dedicated to, I had no idea that this murderer was living next door, or that my boyfriend was a serial killer, or, you know, I never expected it. I would never have known in a million years all those bodies were buried in his basement. Yeah, that's exactly the point. You know, it is never, they're never just necessarily, I can't say never, but it's not going to be right out there in your face. It's going to be subtle and disguised. And that's why it's so dangerous. Because it's going to say, I'm your spirit guide, I'm here to help you, and I'm going to heal you now. But it's like Vicky talks about, you know, there's give and take. And eventually, what you're going to give is your life. Because that's all that's going to be left for you to give.
That makes me wonder, with a lot of people that have the experiences where they see the extraterrestrials of light, like such as like the Bledsoe case, not to like throw him under the bus or nothing like that. But, you know, if, like you'd mentioned, they come as light, that seems like the perfect way to come. And by healing people, people think that they're doing good for them in their life because they're coming and they're healing them. But for all you know, you could be entering into some type of a nonverbal contract where now by healing your physical vessel, now your soul is theirs after your physical vessel doesn't work anymore. So a lot of these people are being healed by these things. It may not be as it seems, because it's the usual like jinn or devil's trick that, you know, you make a deal and you have to be very precise on the way that you make the deal. Otherwise, they'll take any little aspect that they can to twist and contort it. So you could say, I want to have the best health out of anybody. And in turn, they go, okay, you can have the best health out of anybody in this life. And after that, that's the end of it. Your soul is now mine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to be careful. There's just so much that people don't understand. And there's so many people who could be tricked into terrible situations because people are sharing a false narrative. And that's why I talk to people. That's why I share this information. That's why I do this, because there's just so much false information out there. You know, there's people who will say, well, you can't be abducted if you're a Christian. That's not true. You're the one they want more than anything. You know why? Because if they can lead you astray, it doesn't mean you're not still saved. Once your name's written in the book of real life, I believe it's written in the book of life, but it does mean that you could lead others astray, or you won't be there to share the truth of the gospel with somebody, and they might never find eternal life or salvation because you were so busy palling around with your extraterrestrial friend that you weren't doing your work here on earth. You know, I mean, or sharing a false narrative. So people were like, oh, well, they have to be a benevolent space brother. So I'm going to go join that cult down the road that's all about UFOs. I'm going to go and do this. And then, like you said, they're making contracts and deals that they can't get out of. And that's what terrifies me, is that it's such a beautiful side of evil that it's almost indiscernible. And people are just so enraptured by UFOs and aliens and who and what they are. And they want to know more. And I understand that curiosity, but you have to approach it with a lot of caution, and you have to make sure that you're listening to a lot of different sources and getting to the truth. You don't have to take my word for it, and you don't have to, I can't make you believe my experiences in my past, but what I can do is tell you, don't just take one person's word for it. Listen, do your own research, do your own work, and does it give all the glory to God? If they don't, if it doesn't, then it's probably not legitimate.
Mm-hmm. So once you put that target on your back, it's hard to get off, so be fully aware of what you're getting yourself into.
Exactly. I agree, 100%.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in. And I know that there's a lot more that we can definitely get into, so we'll definitely have to come back for a part two. But I know that you said that you only had a certain amount of time just because of all of your stuff that you're dealing with and everything. But before we wrap everything up, I always like to try to leave stuff on somewhat of a high note with some words of wisdom. So if there is any words of wisdom that you might want to bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
Wow, I think I kind of almost just did that. But it does be, honestly, you know, really vet things out. Be careful who you listen to. You don't have to believe me, but don't also believe the first person you hear. Take your time, research things out, and make sure you're really pray. If you're a praying person, then pray about it. If you're not, give it a try. It's awesome. I love it. I do it every day, many times a day, all day. my words of wisdom other than that are enjoy life. Enjoy every minute. Enjoy every day. Enjoy the people in your life. Take the time to tell the people in your life how much you love them and care about them and appreciate them, because we never know how long we're going to be here. And it's important to just let people know how much you love and appreciate them.
Ain't that the truth? I know that I've said it a million times on the show that I think that part of the meaning of life is experience. And if you're not letting yourself experience full love, family, all of that, then you're missing out on a lot of the most important experiences in life. And exactly. As far as the first words of wisdom that you mentioned too, I always tell people on the show, you know, don't listen to one particular person. Some of the best information you get is when you listen to a multitude of people and then you take all the common pieces between all of them and then kind of go from there. So do your own research, create your own thoughts, and just know the background and start trying to connect dots yourself. Because if you have people always connecting dots for you, you're always going to get led astray. If you start connecting the dots yourself, then you're leading your way down your own path. And that's the path you're supposed to be on.
Exactly. I agree with that 100%. Yes.
And if anybody wanted to get a copy of your book, they possibly want to talk to you about some of their experiences, or they just want to get in contact with you in general, where might people find your book and where might people be able to come in contact you?
That is a great question. I love when people reach out to me. You can reach out to me through my website, which is KarenWilkinsonAuthor.com, and you'll have all the links for the show. There is a contact page on there that goes straight to my email, so reach out to me that way. Sometimes it takes me a while to get back to you. It depends on my travel schedule and how many I have stacked up, but I do read everyone. If you need wants me to get back to you and it's something I can, I will. If you have reached out and haven't heard from me, I have had a few of those come through. Send it again. That just means something didn't go through, which happens all the time. Technology is not perfect, so I apologize if you tried to get a hold of me and you haven't. I don't recommend, I am on social media on Facebook and Instagram. You can find me as a blue check mark. You can send me a message that way. It's not the best way to get a hold of me because I get so many spam messages in there that I try to wade through them, but I highly just recommend going through my website. And my social media will have links to my website and also links to where to buy the book. It is exclusively at lamarzulli.com. That's LAMARZULLI.com, or wherever we are. We tend to follow around wherever LA Marzulli is. You can usually find me and or Vicki Joy Anderson there as well. We love meeting people, signing books, just talking to people in person. It is amazing. So look for that too. If you go to the events page on LA Marzulli's website, we're usually at those events. Right now, we kind of have a weird break, but I will be in Branson, Missouri in the beginning of December for the Prophecy Watchers Conference. But I don't know if there's anything in between now and then. We've just gone through like 5 or 6 in a row, so I think we're getting a little break right now, which is nice. We need it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially with that much traveling. Traveling's fun, but when you do too much traveling, it stops being fun.
It's been nonstop. Yeah, it has been nonstop. We just got back from Ohio. That was a 2-day drive. I'm so happy to be home.
Well, man, next time you come up to Ohio, you'll have to let me know because I live in Michigan, so I'm only a couple hours north of Ohio, so maybe we can meet up in the middle sometime.
Oh, yeah, let's find a conference nearby the both of us, and we'll just meet in the middle. Sounds good.
Oh, yeah. And of course, I will include all of your links down in the show description so everybody can find everything quick and easy. And I really appreciate you making the time to come on today. Glad we finally made this work. And after doing this one, we'll definitely have to do a part two. And we'll have to do something with Vicky, of course, at some point, too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she's amazing. And you can also find her book, They Only Come Out at Night, in the same place you can find mine. So if you find one, you'll find the other. So.
And you might as well read both because you'd be surprised how much actually probably connects in the middle.
They do. They really connect. And that's why we're going to be doing an interview with you together so we can talk to people about how these two books actually connect and have to do with a lot of the same information. So
you'll have to definitely have to make sure we set that up sooner rather than later because I'm really looking forward to that one.
Oh, yes, definitely.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, sharing your experiences or some of your research, having me as a guest on your show possibly, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can do so through email, which is inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook, or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the Linktree. And every single thing that I've mentioned today on the show is all available in the Linktree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
Parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, O'Reilly.